Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 727. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, I kept on wondering why I continually had 13 episodes of Ring of Honor on my DVR. Evidently, even though they are not existing as a company right now, I'm not sure how deep this, I don't know if they're doing any new tapings on these episodes that are late, because I'm still only watching in November here. But I did see that there was an episode is the 8th of... Oh, I guess that makes sense. The 8th of January was the last one, I think. I was thinking that they were still pumping out episodes and that's why I was not gaining any ground. But I'm wrong here, I think. So, anyway, yep, just watching a little Ring of Honor as we record this podcast, despite it being completely old at this point. You know, Chris, there was some interesting news that popped up here within the last couple of days, and it involves one Shane McMahon, who I... according to whoisthisringsidenews.com, that Shane was scheduled to be in the Elimination Chamber in WrestleMania, but he will be in neither and like it now.
Well, I don't think he particularly likes it, but... Shane, apparently... in addition to actually being in the Royal Rumble, had a hand in formatting the Royal Rumble and planning it, and was competent to do such a piss poor job that they plus I believe also having words with other staffers and people in the match, he is persona non grata at the moment. I wasn't there, so I don't know exactly how things went down. There's people saying that, you know, they're blaming Shane for how the Rumble and the Men's Rumble ended up. There's people saying that, you know, Shane had more ideas for the Men's Royal Rumble that were shot down by his father, as well as Brock Lesnar. Well, I can imagine Shane going to Brock and saying, "I'm going to hit you with these punches, and you're going to sell them." And that not going over well.
I'm not sure how much you can blame the Rumble on Shane necessarily. Like, man, you did not have a lot. Whoever was going to be in that position, I would be completely unenvious of. Like, that would just be a terrible spot to be in my opinion.
Yeah, no. That was just not going to be a good Rumble. The women probably should have closed. I don't know what they had to do the Brock turn, the Heyman turn on Brock first, Brock losing the title, and then Brock coming back. I do get that. But yeah, from an excitement standpoint, yeah, this was not a good Rumble. But yeah, apparently, you know, whatever shit Shane had in it, as well as his overall attitude, apparently has gotten him excommunicated from WWE for the next 3 months, which is pretty much the only 3 months he really appears anymore. So no Shane McMahon match at WrestleMania. I know you're very brokenhearted about that, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, it really is one of those things that. And I think we've said it kind of year in and year out at this point, that he seems to put on good matches, but the stories leading up to them are sometimes convoluted, And he's been the one, as of late, that has had a lot of moments where he goes over at the wrong time. Like, because didn't he crush, like, the Miz trying to fight back after his dad got punked out?
Yeah.
And then there was...
He had to keep Shane strong because he was going to be feuding with Roman Reigns after that. It's just like, that's the period that things really got out of hand. Overexposure, yeah. Shane. He's wrestling at almost just about every pay-per-view in 2019, I believe. He's beating people. He's on Raw and SmackDown both, I believe at the time, because there was not a separate general manager, I think, because Stephanie was off TV by that point.
They hadn't
introduced Andrew Pierce yet, so Shane is on both Raw and SmackDown, taking up gobs of time. Yeah. That's the era where it's just like, Shane got overexposed, he's getting older, he doesn't have the spring in his step that he used to.
Just
general diminishing returns, we're not missing out on anything by not having a Sheamus this year. I also said Shane was probably going to be a little higher up on the card than he needed to be at WrestleMania. So this may all be a blessing in disguise. just a straight up blessing. That doesn't have to disguise itself.
Yeah, like when you pitched it to me originally, like, yeah, I'm not bummed about this. Like, I I'm kind of tapped out of the Shane stuff. Let someone else get in there for a WrestleMania match. Like, someone else can have a spectacle. And like you said, like, Shane, it all depends upon spectacle. And, it just seems too contrived now for his matches. It was nice that he could do it in his younger days and make something... look pretty awesome, but it's time to retire that part of Shane McMahon's character, I think. And even him taking up a spot in an Elimination Chamber match is as much as I know that, like, someone like, say, Austin Theory is not going to win the Elimination Chamber, it's one of those ones where I can understand them giving a spot to, someone a little bit younger to, tell the, kind of encourage them that they're going in the right direction or something like that. Like,
For Shane's sake, I think he might be counting his blessings as well to not be in that thing, because Brock Lesnar may have killed him. I'm looking forward to that part of it. Throwing people around the Elimination Chamber, that should be a good time.
Brock tossing people around is always a good time. Oh, man, Brock Lesnar's turned into, he's German suplex boy, but I think he's, done a better job at pacing it out instead of doing, like, 92 of them in a match or whatever. Like the more lion stalking kind of approach that he's gone with a little bit more recently. come on, he even did it to Bobby Lashley. And if he can do it to Lashley, he can do it to pretty much anyone.
Right.
So, oh, yeah. So that's, is that main roster talk for the show? Just Shane McMahon?
Yeah, I'd say so. We can move on to the rest of wrestling that usually populates this show.
Oh, well, we might actually talk about more of NXT this week. So, I guess a thought that started off Jeremy and I's show was Wendy Chu, blatant Orange Cassidy ripoff. Do you agree?
No, not at all. They have nothing to do with each other.
You do not think that the oh, say, style of wrestling that ends up being employed is somewhat similar. With the whole kind of laid back attitude, you don't think that they're related at all?
Vaguely?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess I kind of get that vibe. Like her being kind of lazy and falling asleep during moves and things like that, it definitely gives me that hands in the pocket and barely kicking someone kind of vibe to it. I mean, I know that it's delivered in a different vehicle, but I feel like the heart of it is all there. I guess, do you like the gimmick?
So far, I'm entertained by it. Yeah, it's a fun gimmick to do. I like it so far. Probably not gonna make it at WrestleMania someday, but a fun underneath that.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely do seem to have some things in store for her. I guess she's already done more as this Wendy Chu character than she did as was it Mai Ying?
Now that's the stuff I could not get into at all.
But
It was a silly gimmick. That was silly in the other direction as far as trying to be ooh dark and spooky. That one never did it. That one never did anything for me.
yeah, but that was her, correct?
Yes, that was her, and
It,
they've they've done a good job with the makeover there. I mean.
yeah.
A little more of that, changing people's gimmicks and looks around.
Yeah, when
Would
you
be
do.
nice for these people who've been around for a while in gimmicks that didn't quite work. Repackage them. Don't blame them for your creative failures.
Well, and that was one where the other thing that is at least kind of nice about it in that department is the fact, like, even if I don't like it, that change in look, like, you'd never know it's the same person if you didn't know it was the same person.
No, you would not.
So, yeah, there aren't a whole lot of times where you can change up the look and feel of a gimmick that much. But because she was so shrouded in mystery, it did kind of help her out in the newer incarnation
Yeah.
here.
There was nowhere to go. There was nowhere to go in that old incarnation. It's like she's supposed to be 2,000 years old. Well, what's he supposed to do when you actually have to wrestle a match? They never did quite figure that out before they scrapped the whole thing either.
No, like I can't believe how much work they did to establish Boa and what's her name there? Who's on the main roster? Why is her name skipping me now? Xia Li.
Oh, Siley, yes. Yeah, they did so much. And I was commenting on it at the time. I'm like, this is a tremendous amount of time and resources being put into this, into these vignettes. And I'm like, I'm not sure what the payoff is going to be. And it turns out I was right about that.
Yeah, I mean, things started going in the right direction with Xia Li, and then she got hurt. And, whew, man, she has had a weird tenure on the main roster so far.
Yeah,
but yeah.
very inconsistent there. Yeah,
Oh.
that part I'm not a fan of, no.
Yeah, and I do have to laugh that all that work was done, and even Boa really, he's trying to carry on the face paint legacy, but he's mostly getting his ass kicked still.
Yeah. Boa will never live down getting his ass kicked by Raquel the way that all went down. There's another person they need to put a mask or some face paint on or what have you. The opposite of the Wendy Chu transformation.
That stench is going to be all over him for a long time. Was it Kona Reeves? Do they still have him around somewhere?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, that was one where I'm like, dude, you just kind of need a hard reboot here. Like, that gimmick was not doing you right. You need something else. But I did think that they had let go of him, so I would hope that he's done that for himself moving forward. If he's still in wrestling. My assumption's always yes at this juncture. So, yeah, there was the Wendy Chu. That was middle of the show. I guess let's go to the beginning of the show then to just do a little rundown. We get Imperium taking on Diamond Mind. Diamond Mind just cannot seem to keep any momentum going in their favor to help establish themselves as a group.
Not really, no. No. They seem to be there to lose a lot of the time. I mean, there's not a lot of upside to Roderick Strong at this point in his career, at his age, tearing his body in the WWE system as anything but a coach. Creed Brothers have potential, absolutely. They're being brought along. But not as a... Wait, they're in the... They're still in the... But they're still in the Dusty, right?
Correct, yeah. They are taking... Because... Okay, they're taking on Grizzled Young Veterans in the next round.
Ooh, that should be good.
Because that was a segment later in the show there.
Yeah. Okay, no. So now they're being brought along. Because Strong doesn't have his great upside. Bivens needs to be on the main roster. Yeah, you know, just being this... this underneath manager in NXT, it's not a great good platform for that guy. He really does need to be. He needs to be on the main roster.
Every time they have him on, he just kills me. And yeah, it's one of those ones where it's just like, just find something for the guy. Like, being the manager of. I mean, they're doing okay things with Ivy Nile. So there is that upside, too. But it is kind of funny that Roderick Strong is their anchor at this point.
Yeah.
You know, as good as he still is and whatnot, it's not like he's... I'm not saying that he's had bad showings. But Diamond Mine would almost be better off at this point as just the young crew there. It helped when Roderick Strong was Cruiserweight Champion, I think. The dynamic worked. But without him holding a championship, it makes it really... It makes it weird for him to be in that spot. You know, because he can be... When he has the championship, he can do the kind of alpha lead... I'm the veteran leading the young people kind of thing. And I mean, I know that he can still do that because he is the veteran. But you just have a little less bass in the voice, I guess, as kids from not that long ago would have said. I mean, it is an interesting spot where Roderick Strong finds himself at this point in his career. Because I don't know, it seems like he has a little more time to go in the WWE I don't feel like I've seen his name bandied about as far as, someone that that's going to be heading off to AEW soon or anything like that.
No, and you know what? He probably should just stay. You know, just take what they give him as far as, you know, the role in NXT, Performance Center, etc. He's not going to be a featured player in AEW either, I don't think, at this point. So, it's probably for the best.
Other question from the opening match for you. How long do you think people in the Performance Center are going to chant Walter during Gunther's matches?
I have no idea. That's something that may never stop. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Oh, well. It will be interesting. I will admit, I'm kind of interested. Like, I do think that kind of stuff wears out at some point because you just give up. Like, you know, Daniel Bryan was never going to be Bryan Danielson in the WWE. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. And, this is one of those things that, guys, it's not going to happen, even if you keep on chanting Walter. It's going to be Gunther so that they get to have all the merch money. So, yeah, I did think that was at least a funny little bit to ask about that opening match. What do you think about Kaylee Ray, bat-wielding babyface?
It was pretty fun to watch her, you know, stalking toxic tracks and Mandy Rose. weaved the whole story throughout the show. You know, she's doing a good job with this. Weird that the match is next week and not waiting for the Vengeance Day special episode, but maybe something happens next week to lead to another match that following week anyway. We'll see. So no. It's fine. Kaylee Ray is a fine opponent for Mandy Rose, for the short term.
I mean, do you get the sense that there's going to be a championship change, or this is just a win for Mandy?
I think it's just a win for Mandy. So,
I guess I just feel like Kaylee Ray's kind of a weird baby face. Just because, like it's almost like the Drew McIntyre situation with the sword. It's just like, nah, buddy, you can actually kill someone with that. Like, why you be swinging that at people? And I guess I kind of feel that way a little bit about the bat. I know that you can't lop off someone's head with a bat. You can try, but it's not going to happen. She's kind of an interesting choice, but because she has brought up the length of her reign many a time, I kind of get the feeling that she is not going to be the one to take down Mandy Rose.
No, most likely not.
It will be interesting to see who they eventually pop the title onto, because there is some other stuff going on here with the ladies. We have also had Cora Jade taking on Raquel Gonzalez, and Cora Jade ends up earning Raquel's respect, so they are going into the Dusty Cup as a tag team. What are you feeling about this storyline?
It's fine. Trying to get something going for the Dusty Cup. No, nothing. Neither of them are going to be in Mandy Rose's universe in the immediate future, so it's got anything to do with them.
Oh. Yeah, it does give them something to do and keep them in the eye of the wrestling fans while not challenging for Mandy Rose. So yeah, it is a nice little diversion for two of your more popular ones. It still is wild. This is another one where Raquel Gonzalez turns babyface simply because what's her Dakota Kai turns on her.
Yeah,
and it's not, stuck.
Not that Raquel's a great babyface or anything. It's, you know, it's just what they're doing. I mean, honestly, they probably could have taken Raquel out of NXT multiple times by now, but they just, you know, it's like they were doing well. It's like they're still doing with Dakota Kai. It's like, you know, they're still doing with Io Shirai.
Oh,
not a lot of the women got called up in that in that transition period, really, which is kind of baffling considering the state of the women's division on both Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how bad it is up there, but yeah, I mean, it is like, I wasn't even really looking through the review, and I'm like, oh, let's talk about all the ladies on the show, and yeah, I forgot that not only did Cora Jade and Raquel are on there, Io Shirai was on, and we also got, I guess, talking about reboots of gimmicks, Saray is turning into a Superman-like wardrobe change there, going from mild-mannered schoolgirl to Warrior of the Sun now.
That's something new? Yeah, no. I'll see how this one plays out. It could be another one of these gimmicks that gains some traction, gets a cult following at NXT, but of course does not work on the main roster. Or actually, I'd probably think it's exactly what it will end up happening.
Oh, yeah, like it's kind of interesting. But I do think that it's another one of those gimmicks that it's a little too one note for my taste, and I think that that's going to end up being a problem in the long run. But it's not a problem right now. Like, I think that it's pretty fun that she's doing that. So yeah, I think that's another fun one, and I do hope that she gets a little bit more of a chance in NXT, honestly. You know, I felt like she kind of came in an interesting time last go around. I know that she was, were they talking about her dealing with some mental health issues? And that's why she kind of had to take some time off. I feel like they were kind of talking.
Sounds right.
Yeah, I feel like Vic.
It sounds right, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I feel like Vic and Wade were talking about that. But yeah, if I'm wrong, leave a question in the comments or something, or leave an answer in the comments. Saray changing. Oh, yeah, because that was the other thing. You had mentioned Dakota Kai. So she was the one that Dakota Kai confronted Saray backstage then.
Yeah, and that match is on next week's show, yes.
Yeah, so there's a lot of women's action still in NXT. I'm not sure that's the quality is as high as it was there previously, but it's still pretty dang good. Was there any other woman segment that I forgot? Just going off the top of my head here.
I don't think there was.
Okay. Oh, no, didn't we? Was there an Indy Hartwell and Persia Parado segment?
Yes, there was. What were they doing? They were advising, was it Briggs or Jensen about how to approach women or something of that nature?
Yes.
And Indy says she likes the silent type. The strong silent type.
Yeah, and you say a lot with your eyes. And and then Jensen tried to pull the eyes on Persia, and she was not having any of it. So, the women are definitely all over NXT. Like, I which of the guys did we have here? Yeah, we just had the Duke Hudson promo. That wasn't. I guess I like the way that they've turned the corner with him since the haircut.
Yeah. They've pretty much already dropped the poker gimmick, so they're already, testing out gimmicks and then throwing them away, pretty quickly, which. You know what? If that's what they're going to use NXT for, that's fine. And focusing it more, making it more serious, seems to be working for them.
Yeah. So that's a nice little thing moving forward. I guess the next big men's segment here: NXT North American Champion Carmelo Hayes and his sidekick Trick Williams. End up having a nice little verbal spat with Cameron Grimes.
Yeah, no. This was definitely a highlight of the show. These two are, obviously Grimes has been around NXT for a while now, and Carmelo has been one of the arguable, highlights of the new crop of 2.0 talent. So no, this worked out really well. They're playing out very well off each other.
I'm really looking forward to this match. Carmelo Hayes has been a lot of fun. I do think at some point, if they want to do something with Trick Williams, he needs to be something more than just the goofy sidekick, as Cameron Grimes pointed out. But there's plenty of time to do that also. Like, that's not something that I think needs to be done pronto for the man. Like, they're doing a good job of introducing his personality into things before getting him into the ring, which, I don't know, maybe he's not ready for that. I have no idea.
Maybe. Yeah, very possible.
Edris Inoff and Malik Blade, what do you think of this new tag team here that seems to be moving along here in the Dusty Cup on the men's side?
I honestly, nothing they've done has really resonated with me at all. Nothing. I can't comment on it.
I do think that it's amusing enough that they're fawning over Mandy Rose, but they haven't really had a lot of time. They're kind of, in a lot of ways, like MSK, where they're coming out of the blue just to be in this tournament and then getting segments after that to kind of help backfill in their characters. But they haven't really, other than the fawning over the ladies in Toxic Attraction, they haven't really made that much of a mark yet. Joe Gacy, with some help, with a distraction, ends up beating L.A. Knight. Grayson Waller and Sanga end up providing the distraction to help out our buddy Joe Gacy. Somehow I just assumed that Harland would be the one helping out, but Grayson Waller continues to be a thorn in LA Knight's side here.
Yeah. Maybe the surprise of the NXT 2.0 era. How effective and good of a babyface LA Knight is. I'm shocked at how well this is going for him.
Yeah, I am pleasantly surprised. I never felt like he was a good babyface when I saw him in Impact. When he was presented that way. But yeah, he really seems to have found a pretty good footing for himself in 2.0 here. It is kind of surprising that one of the old guys is at least one of the old guys is hanging in there. So good for LA Knight. Good for LA Knight. Robert Stone, is he going to stay with Von Wagner or have any more success with Von Wagner? Your thoughts.
I imagine they're going to try, but yeah, this Von Wagner, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have it at all. So what? He's big. He's second generation. They're going to try.
Oh man. Yeah. I think he's the perfect guy to have a mouthpiece for.
Yeah, he definitely needs one of those.
So I do like that aspect of things, but they've also, you know, I guess I like what Robert Stone has done in the way he's presented himself and everything that he's had to be involved with, even if some of it was on the maybe humiliating side, but that also kind of comes with his shtick. But yeah, Robert Stone always seems to throw out the fun character work. So I hope that he gets something a little bit better to chew on.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know that he's not going to end up on my list of best managers ever. But that's another one where it just strikes me as weird. Like, you signed these guys for a reason. Like, I don't think he was going to wrestle in the WWE. Obviously did not think that Malcolm Bivens was ever going to wrestle in the WWE either. Let them use their voice and move storylines forward, man. I almost forgot. Andre Chase ends up beating Draco Anthony, who is a new character that they were trying to introduce.
What a debut.
Yeah, like, I feel like
how,
they...
How is this Andre... Yeah. Go ahead.
I guess I just feel like they've done this to a couple of people at this point. Where they introduce them and then they have them lose their first match, and it's just like, ooh, oof. That's always a bad spot to be put in. Like, yeah, I feel bad for him. Like, you've got to bounce back immediately.
Yeah, and then what are they doing with Andre Chase as a babyface? That makes absolutely no sense at all. I don't get it.
I don't either. Especially when people were booing him anyway. Like,
yeah.
What are we doing here, kids? Well, one people that I do think that we are getting some good work out of, Legado del Fantasma, Joaquin Wilde, Raul Mendoza, taking on Bron Breakker and Tommaso Ciampa in the main event. I'm trying to think of the exact spot that Wilde took that, it was the push off of the top ropes onto the desk. That spill was something amazing.
Yeah, that definitely was, yes.
to take the desk, kind of self splash kind of territory is pretty impressive. So, and yeah, I guess I wasn't surprised that Bron Breakker and another one of the old guys hanging on there, Tommaso Ciampa, end up winning this thing. But I did think that this was probably one of Mendoza and Wilde's better matches in NXT in general.
Yeah, no, it was a pretty good match. Continuing setting up Breakker versus Escobar, which also should be very good. I have no doubts about that.
Yeah. So, any other general thoughts on NXT before we move to AEW Dynamite?
Nope, not at all.
Okie dokie. Jon Moxley gets to take on everyone's favorite whipping boy, Wheeler Yuta. Another brave showing by one Mr. Yuta, but he ends up losing yet again to Jon Moxley, which is not a surprise. I do think the
not at all. Go ahead.
I do think the surprise was after the match.
Yeah, after the match is certainly what's worth talking about here. Yes, one Bryan Danielson confronted Jon Moxley, but not to challenge him to a fight, but to ask for Moxley to become his partner and become a and take the young guys in AEW under their wing. And essentially doing a Dan Lambert promo 100 times better than Dan Lambert about the state of AEW and the goofy gimmicks and everything else like that and all the flippy moves. And Danielson is absolutely the perfect guy to do that. It was great. It was, you know, playing, you know, something to someone a little bit unhinged, you know, trying to build a cult. But, you know, you could buy into some of the things he was saying. You could absolutely, you know, see his point. And they didn't have Moxley reject him right away. So, no, this was very, very well. This is very well, very, very good. And a good continuation of Danielson's heel turn, which I was worried they would just have him go up, shake Hangman's hand and go, "Aw, shucks, you beat me. You're the better man." And then go back to being, you know, it's Bryan Danielson. No, this is way more interesting.
Well, I know that I really loved the heel Daniel Bryan there when he was trying to save trees and he kept on talking about his recycled t-shirts and everything. That run of his, you know, at least relatively recently within the WWE, was a really fun one for me. And I was just like, oh man, this guy can really play a dick well. And it's carried over. Like you said, like that promo was brilliant when he was running down. Like, honestly, just everyone involved in the match in one way or another.
So,
he's really, really good. Like, he is one person who definitely has benefited from the move over to AEW. Like, he's almost doing what I expected Edge to do in some ways. Like, he's just wrestling the best of the best. Or I guess he isn't really wrestling just the best of the best. But yeah, I guess I've really enjoyed this AEW run so far out of Daniel Bryan. Like, it just seems like a lot of the people that have come over have ended up running into some weird roadblocks. Like, because what's his name? Miro kind of has gone off the radar.
Yeah, well, we've talked about that before. He's probably injured. But yeah, no. But in general, it happens on the AEW. You know, people, we don't see them for weeks, and we don't talk about them. I don't think we've seen Adam Cole was on the show, but Bish and O'Reilly were not. You know, things of that nature seem to happen repeatedly at AEW. They were Orange Cassidy and Danhausen walked to the ring with Wheeler Yuta, but Trent and Chuck were nowhere to be seen. We've been doing, you know, this build to appears to be a heel turn for Trent Beretta, who just doesn't like the new additions to the crews, particularly Wheeler Yuta or what have you. But you know, what, 2 or 3 weeks in a row? We haven't gone back to that at all.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to get to a good feud if you don't continue to build it up. Even if it's an undercard feud, like obviously I'm not expecting Trent versus Danhausen to be main eventing anything. You do need lower level stories though, and that would have fit out perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Oof. And I guess to move into it, do we want to talk about Dan Lambert, the man of two promos on this show?
I guess we have to, because he took up like a quarter of the show. Oh my god, with this guy! And he's got to be playing off of Brandy to make it all worse?
Yeah, there is... both of them have pretty much unconditional go away heat for me all the time now.
Yeah, this is really, really bad. And what's going to make it weirder is when they actually get around to doing Paige VanZant versus Brandy. Most likely, Paige VanZant's going to get the bulk of the cheers, and she's still going to have Dan Lambert with her. The whole thing is just a human psychology mess. Brandy seems legitimately angry at the Chicago crowd for getting on her for her faux pas of saying Cleveland. She just has no stage presence at all. She's easily rattled. Just stop with her. She's not a good performer. Maybe she was fine as a ring announcer from WWE, but is anything more than that? Maybe when she was just seconding Cody, you know, pounding on the mat, occasionally interfering, she'd be fine. But no, not as a featured character amongst herself. And why the hell did Cody leave his wife to be accosted by three men? Where was he tonight? Where was last night? Why wasn't he on the show? If his wife's gonna be in a vulnerable situation,
yeah, that was really awkward. I'm just like, I was thinking that the whole time. I'm like, where's Cody to at least back these guys off? But it's
the whole thing was just so bad, and you know, Brandy, you know, legitimately getting gotten to by the crowd, so turning herself heel, or was she already being a heel? I don't know. You know, all I know, if you're getting ready to fight someone, and they run at you and lift you off the ground, the first second you can, you run.
Yeah, that's one where I'm just...
You're running the opposite direction.
I guess Brandy can talk okay. I don't think she can cut a good promo, which I think are two different skills.
You said the same thing about Dan Lambert.
Huh?
You said the same thing about Dan Lambert.
I
guess we'll, you know what, because we're already talking about Lambert, let's just skip ahead a few segments to talk about what the hell is he even doing with Lance Archer? At first I thought maybe Jake the Snake was going to be, you know, taken off TV because of his health, but no, he's still out there. You know, cutting a lot better promos than Dan Lambert. Somehow Dan Lambert can, I guess, spend time with Jake the Snake Roberts now and still not learn that a wrestling promo is supposed to be about building something up, not tearing everything down. I guess some people are too boneheaded for Jake the Snake to even teach them how to do promos. God.
Well,
do you realize he's gonna be managing people in three different segments on during shows now? Between the Men of the Year, Paige Van Zandt, and Lance Archer now for whatever reason, who already has a manager as we pointed out.
And he can speak for himself too. So it's like this double redundancy.
He doesn't fit in this environment. I know he did the deal with Impact years ago, and it was actually received fairly well. I never watched it because I haven't watched AEW. I haven't watched Impact since the Hardys left. But I heard it was it went okay. But this agree boomer using all the modern buzzwords about cancel culture and whatnot, and then having to rip on everything associated with AEW. Not, you know, once again, as I said, a promo is about building something up, not tearing everything down. And he refuses to learn that. Tony Khan continues to put him on TV. Tony Khan is showing that he does not know the difference between a good idea and a bad idea. You know, the really good parts about AEW are probably better than anything on WWE. But the bad parts of AEW are just as bad as the worst parts of WWE.
Right now, there are definitely, and it does help that there are more highs on AEW to me.
Usually, yes, there are.
In general. So the bombs get glazed over a little bit better than they do in the WWE, because the WWE is like 2/3 bombs and 1/3 good stuff. Like, it really helps that they're like 2/3 good stuff and 1/3 bombs. It really does a lot for you.
Yeah.
It was hard to look past the bombs this week. Just because, like you said, Lambert was involved so many times. It's just like, I don't need to see this guy again. Literally, ever.
It's all bad. I just don't get it.
But yeah, I agree with you. Like, I think AEW, and it's something I kind of talked about, they value the idea more than the whether it's good or not. Sometimes, like, I understand that the talent is coming up with more of these plans and whatnot than would be generally thought of in the WWE. But yeah, sometimes the editor is a good thing, especially when you're a nationally televised show.
It's time to delete the Dan Lambert from AEW television. But instead, we're gonna get more of them.
One person that, and I guess I did like this segment after the first Dan Lambert appearance. What do they call the Kings of the Black Throne? I believe, Malakai Black and Brody King taking on Pac and Penta in a tag team match.
Yeah, no, this was a good tag match. Once again, I mentioned earlier, I like the idea of Black and King as a tag team. I think they're, you know, it's a good spot for both of them, particularly for Malakai Black, because once again, being introduced into the Codyverse, it can be difficult to come out of that and actually, you know, fit in with the rest of the roster. So putting him in a tag team and, you know, having them go up the ranks in the tag division to eventually get a tag title shot, that's probably the best way that they're going to do right now.
Yeah, and it makes sense too with Phoenix out for Pac and Penta to be taking the L in this one. They can get revenge as the regular tag team at some later date.
Right.
Is Ruby Soho better off in AEW than WWE? Your answer after she loses to Nyla Rose.
That's a tough one. Granted, in WWE, she wasn't getting used much at all. Her presence is probably missed on Saturday, as were a number of women and also men too. But it's a tough one for me. But it's way more of a push than it should be. And a push as in, you know, a tie or a draw, not a push as in she's actually getting pushed in a meaningful way. Yeah, she gets put in featuring positions and she loses. It's never good to be that person. Sometimes it's better to be the person who even loses more than they win, and they're the person who never wins in the big match.
Yeah, you've really got to dig yourself out of a hole when you don't win any of the big matches. So I was interested to see how the outcome of this one came up. And it came up for Nyla Rose, who's also someone that's really kind of had a rough go of it in general in AEW.
Yeah. It was a tough match, but yes. If you're going to use Nyla Rose as the monster of the women's division, she also needs to win with some matches, too.
So, though I'm not completely bummed, it did kind of make me think. I'm with you on Ruby Soho. She's at least getting TV time and getting to wrestle. So I do think she's still slightly better off in AEW than the WWE. But that is quite a albatross to have around your neck that you don't win the big one. And you've only been in the company for like 3 months and you've lost 3 big matches.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a tough pill to swallow. And then MJF versus CM Punk ends up taking up a solid 45 minutes of airtime or so. I'm not going to say that I don't think they actually wrestled for 45 minutes. I think that's when ring introductions started occurring. So I do feel like the match itself was still a solid half hour, I would imagine.
That's
40 minutes. Okay.
40 minutes of the actual bell to bell. Of course, there was the break in between with the choke out that was ruled invalid in the ring. Started. This was really an attempt to do a classic wrestling match on TV with some modern spots and moves and etc. It worked most of the time. It was really, really good. I hesitate to call it great, but for a match that long, it held my attention most of the way through, and yes, was really good.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I ended up rewatching it, not a complete pay attention on the rewatch, but I did pop it on while I was doing some cleaning around the house. And I was wondering, like, I was like, did I not pay that much attention? Was it that good of a match? Like, and I think you're kind of in the right pocket there, where there wasn't anything spectacular about the match, but it was a really good match. Like, it's one of those Randy Orton things where I'm like, how did he just have another good match, but I don't remember anything about the match? Like,
if you're doing something like this as a re-education towards slower, more psychologically sound matches instead of spot fest, this could be a good push in the right direction, or at least more things like it. I don't know if much more needs to go that long, because we are literally, last like 6 months of AEW, we've seen four matches go over 30 minutes or longer. So on regular television, not even pay-per-view, yeah, that's actually quite a lot. But this was also different. This was paced differently than the Danielson matches with Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. This was definitely an attempt to do a slower, more deliberate pace. And it's the type of match that it was a risk putting this on television and putting it in front of that crowd. But it mostly worked. The body work that they both did, the working on an arm or a leg stuff, they sold well throughout. They sold the exhaustion of the match. They sold the pain of the maneuvers they were using. It was actually close to a masterclass in selling and pacing of a match like this.
Yeah,
and then the finish was really, really well executed, because on first viewing, I did not see Wardlow throw in that ring. That was really well done. How they had to point it out on the slow-mo replay. That was good.
Yeah, like, that was one, when they showed that replay, I'm like, oh man, that's brilliant. Like, it's one of those things where sometimes when the WWE does that close-up, you're like, oh, I know someone's coming in from behind to attack them. There was no reason, like, when Wardlow was going face-to-face with CM Punk was when he dropped him the ring. So it made sense to have the camera in their faces so that the second camera was the one that had to catch the exchanging of the ring.
I didn't even notice that. I thought it was a throw. No. He dropped it. Brilliant. I missed it on the second. I missed it on the replay too.
Was a little. I mean, it was a little. I wouldn't call it a throw, but it was definitely a. Do you want to say a fling? Because he took it behind his back and just gave it a little. Like, he did have to give it a little bit of oomph to get it to MJF, who wasn't, just right behind him. And the execution was perfect on that. And, it also is another one of those things where the referee should not be paying attention. Like, AEW has a bad habit of making their referees look stupid.
The brawl out in the crowd where the referee wasn't even counting, that wasn't one of their finer, let's give the referee some credibility moments here.
Yeah, so this one, at least this exchange of the ring, I think that, and maybe it's just because MJF is kind of, quote-unquote, old school, I do think that he kind of helps with these throwback vibes, and that's, to me, feels like more of a throwback thing, especially when you're ending up hiding in. Anytime anything gets hidden in tights, I think back to, the 80s when I started watching wrestling.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely an attempt to do a match of that nature. And also, I think they, Other people were referencing a 2005 Ring of Honor match between Punk and the now late Jimmy Rave. That followed a very similar formula. I have not seen that match. I've seen one of the Punk Rave matches. I've seen the blow off of the cage, I think. I think they also had a dog collar match, because that was about time, it was a little before I got into ROH DVD stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I did go back and watch a little bit of the old, even before that. So, but yeah, but that's beside the point. But no, a good attempt to have an old school match on TV. Definitely a risk. One that paid off, because the part where I were talking about, Punk takes a loss in Chicago. MJF. But obviously, if we're going to continue this, MJF, if you think about it, MJF did have to win the first match to keep this going. So we'll see. Maybe they'll get a gimmick match. Maybe they'll give him a cage match or some other kind of gimmick match at the Revolution pay-per-view.
Well, and I thought that was something else that was pretty telling. The crowd reaction. I feel like the AEW crowd, maybe it's just because Chicago crowds do tend to be a little more boisterous than most, whether it's AEW or the WWE, in my opinion, but because AEW has, for the most part, established a win in your hometown angle, seeing a loss in hometown was kind of refreshing on their broadcast. The only thing that took a little bit of starch out of it was the fact that there was a fake loss before the real loss.
Yeah, but MJF did get two visual victories over CM Punk.
Yeah.
Something to see that either. Yeah, no. The IBF has quite a bit to brag about. They've got reason to keep the feud going. No, it was, Punk definitely needed, this feud needed something, because they've been kind of meandering on promos and getting a little too in love with their verbiage and whatnot. Their insider stuff and their, or what have you.
No.
This was just a good match, and the match, the angle was the match itself, and the match itself is going to sell a future match between these two. Yeah. They needed this. Punk needed something to sink his teeth into, and to not just be beating ham and eggers on opening matches
on Rampage.
On Rampage, yeah. I keep saying good. Once again, I'm trying to. I'm avoiding the hyperbole. Worked, but it was good, really
good. Yeah. I am not sure that. I mean, we're only a month into the year. I'm not going to say it's going to be a match of the year candidate, because I do think that it'll probably get overshadowed sometime in the next 11 months. But it is a nice, probably the first real great match of 2022? Yeah, it seems reasonable. It seems pretty reasonable.
No. Danielson Page 2 was on the first dynamite of the year. I would say that's in the lead still.
Yeah.
I would say that's in the lead still.
Yeah.
Because nothing on WWE TV has reached that level, so.
Oof.
Yeah, I put that in the lead, yeah.
No. WWE is. Oof, they used to be able to hang their hat on some good in-ring wrestling, and while there are still some very good wrestlers there, they haven't really hung their hat in that department for a little while here. They have definitely tried to go more entertainment as of late, and a little less wrestling. Okay, beer time, I think, then. Now that AEW is done, I can talk about Hoofhearted Brewing from Marengo, Ohio. They also have a kitchen that is here in Columbus. This beer, they happen to brew in conjunction with Short Throw Brewing. It's called That's What Happens When You Put Ketchup on a Hot Dog. It's a ghost-style ale with raspberries, passion fruit, lime, coriander, and Pinot Noir salt. I'm not sure that I could ever know if salt is, in fact, in a beer. But I will tell you that the raspberry, passion fruit, and lime are quite prominent in this. Coriander might get a little washed out with all the citrus, too. But it has a nice little, it probably adds a nice little spice component that's a little more subtle that maybe my palate is not picking up. I would highly suggest this beer, which is attainable in quite a few states. So I would say for people to take a look at Hoofhearted Brewing, very, very good brewer here in Central Ohio. And the can artwork for all of their stuff is very good also. So I would take a look at that stuff too. Belltime Beer from at DeFrango 11 tonight. That is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any fine purveyors of podcasts, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later. Damn, I think I missed.
Well, you didn't now.